You're listening to the Save the Marriage Podcast. Your marriage can be saved and strengthened if you have the right information. Join Dr. Lee Baucom as he explores ways for you to improve your relationship and your life, starting right now.
Welcome to the Save the Marriage Podcast. This is Lee Baucom, and you're listening to the podcast that's designed to help you save and improve your marriage no matter where you are. And in this series, this is the third of three, where we're talking about what happy couples do differently, 11 things that happy couples do differently that gets them to a better place. And this is really information that can be applied to people who just want to have that happy relationship, but it can also be applied if you're trying to rebuild your relationship. You see, one of the things that I've realized over the years is the same path that builds a strong relationship from the beginning is the path that you have to use to get back when your relationship has gotten into trouble. It's the exact same path. You're trying to build the same thing. Now, sometimes you're working from a little further down the hill as you build up, but it's still possible to do that. The first week of this series, I talked about several things that happy couples do differently around conflict, and that's ways that they manage the difficulties that are going to come your way, guaranteed to come your way over the lifetime together. Then the second week, we talked about how couples connect differently, how happy couples connect differently than those that find themselves into trouble. And we outlined several ways that you can build that connection. And then connection is one of the most important ways of really having a stable relationship. Now, this week, we want to take on one other piece. In this episode, we're going to talk about how happy couples make room for their companion. So the first week was about conflict. The second week was about connection. And this week, it's about your companion, of how you make sure that there's a place and a space for the differences between you. So let's jump right in and talk about the final three pieces of the 11 ways that happy couples are different. Number 9 is happy couples accept that they will have different viewpoints, that they'll just see the world differently. I truly believe that we all have paradigms, and the problem is that we forget we have a paradigm. So what is a paradigm? A paradigm is a way of seeing the world. It's a way of understanding what happens around you, of interpreting the behavior of those around you, of interpreting life around you, of interpreting kind of the bigger questions of life. We all have a different way of viewing that. And the way we build that paradigm is by living life. You know, there's a difference in how different generations view the world. There's a difference in how different gender, men and women see things differently. There's a difference in how your education process can affect that, where you went to school, who you hung around with, what activities you were involved in, the experiences and events of life. They all shape how you understand what's going on. And because of that, it should be no surprise that we're going to see things differently than other people, and we're going to see things differently than our spouse. The problem is, at the beginning of a relationship, we fool ourselves into thinking that we see things just alike. We fool ourselves into thinking that we're on the same page. We never were really on the same page. We might have been in the same chapter, but we have never been on the same page, just because it's two different people coming together and seeing things from different angles. One of the mistakes that people make when they look at my material, and I talk so much about becoming a we, is they assume that when I say a we, what I'm talking about is having, you know, some kind of a mind meld, the Vulcan mind meld, where, you know, you're just seeing exactly what the other person is seeing. You're exactly on the same place. Maybe the super glue relationship where you're kind of glommed together and you have to do everything just alike. You go to a restaurant, you have the same plate of food, you go do the same activities, you have the same hobbies, the same friends, and everything else, that you're basically a stuck together unit. And that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is the choice of two very strong individuals who know themselves to come together and create a stronger third entity. This place of seeing that the two of you are in a we're on the same team doesn't mean you lose yourself to the other person. There's a saying in business that in a partnership, if both people see things everything alike, then one person is not necessary. And I believe that's the same thing in a marriage, that if both of you are on the exact same page, one of you is not showing up to the relationship. It's not that you have to leave, that you're entirely unnecessary. It's that you're not adding anything. And a lot of times what I've realized is that when people are, pretending like they're on the same page, that's exactly what they're doing. One or the other or both are pretending that they see things just alike. And I consider that to be a false intimacy, what I call a pseudo intimacy. Oh, we see things just alike, and you have to sit on your disagreements. And the reason we sit on our disagreements is because we're afraid that we can't process the disagreement. Instead of there being room for disagreement, instead of there being room for differences of opinion, we get caught up in the fact that something must be wrong if we have a difference of opinion, if we see things differently. And so either a couple constantly pretends to be on the same page, or they're constantly feeling like they have to bicker about it to get to the person to see their point of view. There is a difference, though, between understanding and accepting or agreeing with the view of another person. We can come to an understanding of a viewpoint, and that's the whole point of education, to be able to understand how other cultures, however thought processes, how other pieces of the world can understand something different from a different angle, and yet still kind of agree to disagree, and maybe even not accept what's being said. You know, I remember in philosophy class that we went over school of thought after school of thought after school of thought. And each time I could say, okay, I kind of see a piece of this, but I don't agree with this. And I would begin to try to adapt that school of thought, recognizing that it wasn't my school of thought, that I could find some pieces in it, but I couldn't accept it. And what I realized is that, you know, here's a bunch of people looking at life. Back in history, they were looking at life and trying to explain life. And they came to different conclusions about what life is about, what's important in life. And it's not that they were wrong. They were just looking at a different part of the puzzle. I didn't have to accept that school of thought. I didn't even have to agree with that school of thought. But I could come to an understanding of what that school of thought was about. I could come to an understanding of what that whole basis of how they got to the viewing the world that way. And I could come to see and appreciate some of the way they did it, even if I didn't agree or accept it. So what we're really doing in this one of how happy couples accept that they will have different viewpoints is that we're working for understanding. We're working to see where the other person is coming from and how they have a way of seeing the world that way. It's kind of a curiosity. One of the ways that you can think about this is making your spouse a research project. What makes them tick? Not your relationship as a project, but your spouse as a research project of trying to understand more and more the depths of your spouse's understanding of the world, of their soul, of how they view the world and why they see it that way. And sometimes even being willing to change yours. And you might say, wow, you know what? I kind of agree with the way you're seeing the world. Now that I kind of see that, now that I have a difference of opinion, I can kind of change. And what you realize is that over time, happy couples do tend to change each other's viewpoints. They're willing to be accepting and listening to the other person's place. And so there can be changes. There can be some growth. There can be some different trajectory just because they're seeing a different way it could be. That doesn't mean you have to suddenly jump on board with your spouse, but to appreciate and maybe even at times agree with how they're seeing things can be a very powerful change in your relationship. Now, one of the ways that I really I appreciate this is kind of a richness of acceptance. And so to kind of end this one piece, I want to paraphrase Soren Kierkegaard. Soren Kierkegaard said that life is not a problem to be solved, but a reality to be experienced. And in a relationship, I think the way of thinking about that is that a spouse is not a puzzle to be solved, but a person to be experienced. And that's that place where we, instead of trying to fix your spouse, trying to get them to see things the right way, instead of trying to somehow move them to the place where they're seeing things, and I'll put this in quotes, the right way, in the correct way, or to see the light, you know, to come to a better understanding of who they are, instead of that, we understand them as a very interesting person to be experienced. And when that happens, there's room for difference of opinion. What you're really working on is allowing room for your spouse's way of seeing the world. You don't have to agree with it in order to understand it and seek to understand. So, number 9, happy couples accept that they will have different viewpoints. Not just accept it, but come to understand it. Number 10, happy couples make room for a spouse's interests and space. And one of the big mistakes I see couples make is that one person gets jealous of the other person's hobbies and interests and friends. It's not that there is anything inappropriate going on. They just get jealous of that. And they can phrase it lots of ways. You know, if you really loved me, you would want to only spend time with me. If you really loved the family, you would want to do more stuff with the kids. If you really had a priority of the relationship, you would leave that stuff behind. You would stop doing those things. You would stop those pursuits, and you would come back to what's important, us. Now, when that happens, when we get to that place, what we're doing is we're making the marriage a 24/7 experience. We're making that relationship not just a priority in life and not just the priority relationship in life, but the priority over everything else. And that's a dangerous place to be. It's just as dangerous as neglecting the relationship, because when we have that place where there's no room for space and there's no room for interests, what ends up happening is you end up with two very boring people who don't have any energy to bring into a relationship. A lot of research has shown that the strongest relationships are the ones where there is both a strong connection within the relationship and there are outside interests outside of the relationship. You have to have both. Now, the reason for that is if all the energy is just involved in the relationship, there is no new energy being brought in. It's a closed system, and over time, a closed system loses its energy. And so there has to be some place for that outside energy to come in, to have a break from each other and to go out and recharge and come back into the relationship with more energy and more excitement in life. The opposite is also true. If all that's going on is people are outside of the marriage, you know, they're doing their hobbies and they're doing all the outside stuff and they're not doing anything to the relationship, they've got lots of energy for the outside stuff, but they're not bringing it back to that primary relationship. So there has to be a balance. But there has to be a balance that does allow room for those interests and spaces. I've talked with many spouses that felt completely suffocated because they had to give up their hobbies of golf, of hunting, of fishing, you know, kind of those longer, the things that take time. And I've talked to people who used to run marathons and do races. And because the training took time, their spouse wouldn't allow it. And I put the quotes in the quotes around allow, but there wasn't room for that. And as there wasn't room for that, the suffocation grew. And so what we really want to work on in a strong relationship is nurturing the togetherness and the otherness, that there is an open system that allows for pursuits of outside interest. It's not just about the place of that relationship, but that there is a space for outside interest and some space for discovering the world out there and enjoying some time alone. There's a balance between time together and time alone. And each couple has to find what that is. But when that is out of balance, when one person is either feeling distanced or suffocated, there has to be some place of coming together and saying, how do we work this out? The solution is not all together or all apart. The solution is in a balance. You see, what happens is when the people are allowed to chase after some of the passions of their life in appropriate ways, they bring that passion back to the relationship. When they've gone away and they've been energized by some event or some hobby or some time away and they come back, they bring in that passion into the relationship and they share it as energy. And so the balance is of outside pursuits and of time as couple. There has to be a way of prioritizing that balances it for both people. That's the key thing, is to have balance, to find a place where it balances together. You see, hobbies and interests are not threats to the relationship, but they're enrichments and they're chances to recharge, to find ways of coming back together with more energy, more interest, more passion, and finding ways of nurturing that. So when couples can support and nurture the other person's interest, not push them into what you want them to be in, but allow them to chase their interest, that person can grow. You can grow. The other person can grow into more complete, more healthy individuals. And when you have more complete, more healthy individuals, you have the glue it takes to create that strong we. It's very important, though, that you don't force a spouse into doing those things. You know, if a spouse did something at one time to say, you got to go do that, you need to go do that just because you heard me say that, doesn't allow for their free choice to say, maybe I'm not interested in that anymore. Maybe I want to do something different. Maybe I want to explore and find different ways. Now, I've got to admit that part of the reason I find this important is because I know how important those outside interests are to me. I tend to be somebody who really gets into something when they get into it. And so I like to pursue it pretty heavily. And one of the nice things is my wife has been able to support that. So I've been able to spend some time sailing and scuba diving and paddleboarding and trail running and running adventure races and doing a marathon and all those other pieces that can take some time away and yet leave me in a much better place. And my hope is that I've done the same for my wife, that when she's had an interest, I've been able to, you know, push for it. And so when she was interested in photography, to kind of suggest a camera and taking classes and doing all those things. Now, recognize that a spouse may not stick with the same interest over time. They may not stay in that same place, and that's okay. That's not the point. The point is that they have room to chase those outside interests a little bit and explore what the world is to them so that they can bring that passion and bring that energy back in. Sometimes couples really get stuck on the fact that they ought to do every hobby together. I do think it's important for couples to find some ways of doing things together, whatever that is. But I don't think everything has to be that. I think there has to be room for the internal pursuit in a relationship and the space to pursue those outside interests so that there's some energy coming in, so that you're a healthy, well-rounded person that can bring that back into the relationship. Okay. Number 11 is one of the more important ones, and I put it at the end for one important reason. This is where the companionship is about preservation and protection. Happy couples protect the relationship and their spouse, both the we and the other person. Now, there are different pieces to this, but I think it's very important that spouses agree not to speak poorly of their spouse or the relationship in public. This is just all about respect. I don't know how many times I've been sitting at a party or sitting out somewhere at a restaurant or somewhere else, and I hear somebody just tearing their spouse apart. And all they're doing is being disrespectful to their spouse and to the relationship. And what they're saying to their friends is, this most important person in my life, I'm not even going to speak kindly of them in your presence. And so I think it's important for couples to really focus on that, to be sure that when they're out there as individuals, they're never speaking poorly of the spouse or the relationship. If they've got issues with the spouse, to talk it over and solve it with the spouse. If they got issues with the relationship, that they find some ways of resolving that without dragging that into the world. One of the things I recognize is that whenever somebody's doing that, part of what they're doing is trying to blow off steam. And when we're doing that criticism, when we're doing those complaining things, all we're doing is taking energy away from where it needs to be. It gives you an excuse to not address that. But more than that, a lot of times people kind of take it on as sport to poke fun at this, and they see it as a way of pulling themselves up. But really all they're doing is pushing the other person down. We never gain ground by pushing anyone else down, and that's particularly true with our spouse. So happy couples protect their relationship and their spouse by never speaking poorly of a spouse or the relationship in public. That's just about respect. They also don't belittle or shame a spouse to that spouse. We can talk about issues and concerns without being belittling or shaming. You ought to, you should, shame on you kind of phrasings push a spouse down without giving them a chance to grow into something different. So we don't want to belittle or shame a spouse. Many times I've watched in pain as somebody has teased and made fun of a spouse to that spouse. And all that does is tear down the fabric of that other person. You know, if what we're trying to do is have two strong people come together as a team, the teardown does no good in doing that. So just agree that you're not going to ever belittle or shame a spouse to them, and you're not going to speak poorly of the spouse or the relationship in public. One way to change that is to become your spouse's number one fan. You know, think about it like in sports. You've seen these fans that are just kind of gung-ho for their team. They wear the hats and they wear the gear and they never speak poorly. You know, if the team makes a mistake, they say, oh, they'll be back next season. You wait and see. They're going to get the best draft. And they go on and on giving excuses and reasons why their team is going to be fine. But what they're really looking at in some ways is the good stuff of that team. What happens if we become the number one fan of our spouse and we look for the good stuff? Of all the good stuff that they do, we look for those amazing things about that spouse and we celebrate that. We can either look for the good or the bad, but when we look for the good and celebrate that, we build our spouse up. And so when I watch happy couples as individuals, they are their spouse's number one fan. They are there to back them up and push them along and always be cheering them on. Whatever that spouse is trying to get to, they're always cheering them on to be better, to be more complete, to be the best person that person can be. My wife and I were talking just yesterday in the car. We were driving along and we were talking about how, you know, what's really cool is when you watch a couple where they really do bring out the best in the other person. It's not that they somehow fixed the other person. That's one of those misnomers we have out there that, you know, the spouse is the way they are because I fix them. You know, they're my project and I fix them. I don't think that's it. But when a spouse brings out the best in you, it's often because you're their number one fan, and they're your number one fan. And so you can cheer each other on, and you can always look for the best that pulls the relationship to a higher point. The next thing I would talk about as protecting the relationship is having boundaries that protect that relationship. The boundaries that I'm talking about are ways that you make sure that you protect those vows you made. And part of that is to not have relationships with other people outside of an inappropriate relationship outside of the marriage. And what I notice is a lot of times people never set out to have those emotional affairs and even physical affairs. They just kind of happen because they weren't protecting the relationship. Now, behind that is there wasn't the necessary connection that we talked about, you know, in the first episode of this series. There wasn't enough connection to kind of foster the relationship. But then somebody chose not to watch the boundaries. They started having inappropriate texts or Facebook messaging, or they were meeting somebody for meals and talking about things that should have been within the marriage. I consider infidelity anytime anything that should have been saved for the relationship was shared outside of the relationship, whether it's emotional energy or physical connection. And both of those are risks. You see, a lot of times we know we're sharing something because it gives us something that we're lacking somewhere else. Instead of figuring out how to get it from the relationship, we find it somewhere else. And that puts the relationship at risk. So happy couples know how to protect the boundaries of the relationship. They've even agreed to some boundaries. And unfortunately, a lot of times when you're in that beginning phase of a relationship, you don't talk about the boundaries because you never think it'll be an issue. You're so connected with each other that you can't imagine why you would have any outside connection. And then some point, the relationship has a slow point. The connection isn't quite there, and suddenly everything is a little more at risk. So having conversations about who's your friend on Facebook and how you communicate with that person and how you text and what those texts contain and looking at each other's texts and emails and how you both agree to that, when it's appropriate to have a meal with someone that of the opposite sex, you know, if you're looking at that, when it's appropriate to have some meal or some contact with someone to whom you might have some attraction, how you manage that is very important to have that conversation. Boundaries protect the relationship. You see, the feeling of connection is kind of like the tide. It's going to go in and out, up and down. There are times when you're going to feel, wow, we're so connected. And other times you're going to go, wow, you know, I'm feeling some disconnection here. The boundaries that are consistent protect it when the relationship is at a low point, at an ebb point. So when the connection is flowing, the boundaries are less necessary. They're still important to have, but the real importance of those boundaries is when there's an ebb in the connection. It protects the relationship and makes sure that both of you feel good about where the relationship is headed. Okay, those are those last three pieces about the companionship piece of this. Number 9, happy couples accept that they will have different viewpoints. They not only accept it, but they seek to understand how the other person sees things differently. Number 10 is happy couples make room for their spouse's interest and space so that there's energy that can come back into the relationship. And number 11, happy couples protect the relationship and their spouse. They make sure that they've covered both the relationship and the spouse, and they show respect to both their spouse and to the relationship. Happy couples are always building a happy relationship. Happy relationships don't just happen. They are built from the ground up. And it's kind of like a maze. I like to think of it, you know, sometimes people go, oh gosh, you know, we hit a dead end. We're, you know, we've made a mistake here. But think about it as running through a maze. Running through a maze means that sometimes you're going to take the wrong turn and you're going to hit a dead end. But that's not a failure. It just indicates that you can't go that way. So you just back up and you find another way. And that's part of the life of a relationship, is finding yourself at a place where it's not going to go where you really wanted to, and backing up and finding a better path. Every relationship has potential for growth and for improvement. You've just got to figure out where those places are. We don't walk into a marriage with any experience of what that marriage is going to be like, either the marriage relationship or with this other person. And so we have to figure it out as we go. That's why I talked about that on-the-job training in that first series, where we really are having to make room for the fact that we're both going to make mistakes, and that that's part of the nature of learning how to move forward into a happy relationship. You see, many people don't come from very good role models. They didn't see it in their parents. They didn't see it in their family. They come from broken families, or maybe families that aren't broken, meaning there was no divorce, but they really are limping, right? They're really injured and they weren't able to provide a good model. But even for those who come from good models, what you didn't see was what happened behind the closed doors, which was the real magic of the relationship, how they did conflict, you know, how they shared together, how they gave room for each other, how they supported each other. A lot of that's it becomes invisible to the outside observer because it's happening behind closed doors. And so you either didn't come from a good model, or you likely didn't get to see the good model that was there. So don't see those stuck points as permanent. Don't see this as an inevitable place to be. See it as opportunities for growth. The stuck places always give us the opportunities of growing into something else. It gives us a chance to learn and grow. And I will tell you this, of all the relationship in your life, marriage is the greatest opportunity for personal growth. It challenges you the most to look at yourself, be honest with yourself, be honest with the other person, because of the vulnerabilities that are a part of that intimacy. You have to bear yourself in order to get going, and you have to be true to yourself, and you have to be honest with yourself in order to be honest with the other person. All chances for growing and maturing as an individual and as a team. So seek out that information that's going to help you move forward. Look for the places that you're going to learn, because nobody handed you that manual of growth the day you got married. Now is the chance, though, to say, okay, how do we move into these ways that happy couples know differently? How can we move forward and learn more about that? We can always just kind of sit back and feel the shame about our difficulties, or we can use those difficulties as opportunities of moving forward, of growing, of changing, of learning new ways of being in the world. If this has been helpful for you, you might want to know that I have the Save the Marriage system. I created this a number of years ago, and I started with the premise that there is a way to get to an amazing relationship, how to have a thriving relationship, and how to use the material, whether you're at the place where you're looking and considering divorce, or your spouse is considering divorce, or if you're just trying to finish the touches on it, to polish it down and make it an outstanding relationship. Either way, the Save the Marriage system applies. So if you don't have that, please think about getting it. You can find it at SaveTheMarriage.com, and that's going to teach you what a marriage could and should be about, how to move it from wherever you are to where you want it to be. It's kind of a path. Think of it as a roadmap of how to get there, how to get to the amazing relationship that you could have. And it's one that allows you that even if your spouse isn't really on board with this, you can start the process. One person can make a change, because marriage is like a mathematical equation. If you change one side of the equation, the other side is going to change. So when you make some changes on your side, you're going to alter the relationship. You have a chance of saying, you know what? I'm going to start this. I'm going to take responsibility. I'm going to choose to move this along in a different direction. And I'm going to begin to adapt these 11 ways that happy couples do things differently on my end, just to see what's possible. Now, let me ask you to do me a favor, and your other people in the world a favor. If this has been helpful for you, if you're sitting there going, wow, you know what? I wish I had known this ahead of time. I wish I had known this information. I wish I'd had this at my disposal. There are others feeling the same way. There are others who are at a place where they need something to bring something new into the relationship. And this series of podcasts could be it. So if you don't mind sharing, it would be great. You can share each post, each of the three series, just below there's a sharing link. You can share it on all the social media, whether you're on Twitter, whether you're on Pinterest, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, there's a Reddit, all those buttons are there just ready for you to click and log in and say, hey, this is really good, important stuff. You can do that and let other people know how they can find an outstanding relationship and become that happy couple that we all want to be. And that when we do that, we bring that into the world. We bring it into families. We allow for some amazing changes in life. So please help me share the word. And also, if you're not on my webpage, you can do it. If you're on Twitter, it's easy. Maybe you're listening by podcast on iTunes or by podcast on Stitcher. And all you have to do is go to your browser and type in savethemarriage.com/love, L-O-V-E. That'll show us a little Twitter love and just say it creates a pre-formatted tweet. You can just hit send that tells people how to find this link. And that would be a great way of sharing with the world how they can become the happy couple. This is Lee Balcom wishing you the best as you work to have a happy marriage.
You've been listening to Save the Marriage Podcast. For more information and help, please visit us at SaveTheMarriage.com.